Welcome to Find the Magic, the podcast that will help you honor yourself, your kids, and your partner.
We'll give you tips and strategies to create peace and authenticity within your family.
We inhale a ridiculous amount of books and life tools and distill the information for you. I'm Terilyn Griffin.
I'm Caitlin Gabriel.
And I'm Felicia Allen. Let's find the magic together.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hey, everybody, it's Caitlin here today, and I have a special guest with us. I have Feather Burkhauer on with us. So this is a really important topic that I have been excited to talk about on the podcast. I feel like it's so crucial for us as parents or any adult who has children in their lives that they care about. And that is protecting our children against sexual abuse. So what I want to talk about today, and I have an expert on with us, is to go over prevention strategies, how we can keep our kids safe. So Feather, I'm going to give a little bio on Feather Burkhauer. So she is a licensed clinical social worker and holds a master's of social welfare from the University of California, Berkeley. She's been a leader in child sexual abuse prevention since 1985 and has nearly 150,000 school children, parents, and youth professionals, has educated nearly 150,000 of those. Her well-regarded workshop, Parenting Safe Children, empowers adults to keep children safe from sexual abuse. Feather co-authored Off Limits, a parenting book that will change the way you think about keeping children safe. It is available on her website at parentingsafechildren.com. She presents in schools, youth organizations, parenting groups, and businesses worldwide. Feather's also available for private consultation at an hourly rate to residents of Colorado. Feather believes that adults are responsible for protecting children from sexual assault. Feather makes this difficult topic less scary and consistently impresses audiences with her knowledge, commitment, and warmth. And I just have to say, I love that last part, that it's like, I think sometimes this topic can seem a little daunting. We all want to keep our children safe. We all want to know how to do these things. And sometimes as parents and as adults in our children's lives, we don't necessarily know how to do it. And so I'm really excited to have you on, Feather. So thank you and welcome to Find the Magic.
Thank you, Caitlin. So glad to be here.
Yeah, we are so excited. And I'm really grateful that you took the time to talk with us today. So to start right off, I would love for you to tell our listeners a little bit about you and kind of your story of how you got into this work.
Sure. So I started doing prevention education in the early 80s, long time ago, over 3 decades ago. And it's a pretty interesting story. I'll make it brief. So I was studying for my undergraduate degree at San Francisco State University, and I was required to do an internship for my BA. And I had no idea what I wanted to do with the degree that I was studying. I just knew I wanted to work with children in some capacity. And simultaneous to that, so I was looking for an internship. Simultaneous to that, I was at home one evening with my roommate in college, and a made-for-TV movie came on the television. It was, I think, 90 minutes or 2 hours, and it was called Something About Amelia. And the movie was, if anyone's seen it, the movie was about a 13-year-old girl who was being incested by her dad. And I was riveted. At that moment, I was 23 years old. I had no education, no insight, really no experience whatsoever with child sex abuse. I didn't know friends who had been abused, although I know now people were being. But I really was not educated. And I was just very moved by this movie. And at the end of the movie, I turned to my roommate and I said, that is my life work. And from that experience, I be- continued to look for an internship, and I landed in a program called Child Assault Prevention Project in Berkeley in the Bay Area. And it wasn't working with sexually abused children. It was working in prevention in schools with children, teaching them how to, I'm going to make quotes here, keep themselves safe from sexual abuse. And so my whole, you know, the beginning of my career started working with children. I went back and got my degree, and I got my master's degree, moved to Colorado. And over time, Caitlin, I really came to believe that children are not responsible for protecting themselves from sexual abuse. And that was my original training. And we will talk about this today. It is still important for children to have skills and information and body safety, language, etc. But ultimately, adults are responsible for protecting them. You are responsible for protecting your children from sex abuse. They are not responsible to protect themselves. And so from that shift in my perspective, I started the work that I do now, my business called Parenting Safe Children, where I educate youth professionals and parents in seminars that I do, workshops that I do live, and giving parents and youth professionals in schools and camps and et cetera, the information they need to do their very best to minimize the risk of sexual abuse. So that's, in a nutshell, my trajectory. Yeah.
I love that. And I love hearing how you felt really called to this calling, because truly what a meaningful work to be able to help our kids be safe. And I'm with you. It's interesting. The older I get, I think the more, yeah, I do now know, like, friends, really dear loved ones that have experienced child sexual abuse. And it's been daunting to me as I've gotten older and I kind of have come to know these things, that it's like, man, this is so important for us to be aware as parents, because I think you're absolutely right. It is our job. And so I think when we can be aware, and especially when we're armed with the tools that we need, I really love that we can. I think you said something when I was reading about you on your website too, that it's like we can create communities that are quote unquote off limits for child sexual abuse. That we as and it comes from educating ourselves and then educating other adults. So I love that that's kind of your strategy, because I absolutely agree. So I guess maybe to start off with that, tell us a little bit, like, as a parent, because we will talk a little bit about, you know, the body safety conversations. I'd love to talk about that, but first of all, as a parent, what are some prevention strategies that you do give? I know that you, in your books and in your workshop, you talk about a prevention team. Can you tell us what is a prevention team and how do you build one?
Sure. So I'll start by saying that my approach with parents, let's talk about parents, not youth professionals right now, but with parents, is kind of a three-prong approach. First, you need to educate yourself about how this crime happens to your child. Or children in general. How does this happen? And that is all about grooming and what a teenager or an adult does to be able to get access to a child. Then we teach children skills, and then the body safety conversations, it sounds like we'll talk about in a little while. And then thirdly, and most importantly, is what you just named, which is this prevention team. And to me, this is the most important part of prevention, because this is where we take the burden off of children and we invite adults really to take action daily in your life daily with your children and with the caregivers around them. So a prevention team, if you imagine your child or children in the middle and you imagine a circle around them of all the older youth, like so older teenagers. And I say that because if you have babysitters who are teenagers, okay, all the adults who care for and caretake your children. So your family, teachers, administration, camp personnel, nannies and babysitters, gymnastics coaches, faith leaders, on and on. Whoever it is that you leave your child in the care of and you drive away from, the prevention team are those people who you're inviting to be on this safety team, who will follow your body safety rules and boundaries, and not just follow them, but that will help you advocate for your child. And so it's this safety team, but it's not just like in your mind naming them. Really, the prevention team becomes these people when you discuss that, one, they're on this team or you're inviting them to be on it, and that you go over these body safety rules and you get an explicit yes from them that they will participate. And it just, so this isn't so vague. An example is, if you're going to choose in your family that your child has the right and is allowed to give hugs and kisses when they choose, not when they're forced or bribed. So the issue of consent, if that's a family value for you, which I advocate that your children are allowed to choose who they hug and kiss, and if they do and when they do. So your prevention team would be all the people who say, yes, of course. If grandma is demanding the kiss because she wants her kiss and will feel sad if she doesn't get it, it doesn't mean grandma's not safe.
Right.
It just means you need more education and you need to hopefully do your very best to get grandma to come onto your team to understand why you're teaching this boundary. And these are the details of what I get into in my workshops. We practice, we role play, and we take this really simple concept that doesn't always feel so simple because families are complicated. So that's the prevention team, is getting all these people to be on part of your mission to keep your children safe. And then, Caitlin, it's not static. It's not like, okay, here's 10 people on our team. It's about having body safety conversations with each one of those people each time there's someone new. So at the beginning of first grade, second grade, third grade, new camp counselor, etc. Basically, you use the term off limits in the beginning, which is the name of my book. Basically, what you're doing by discussing body safety with caregivers, adults, you're letting the world know. You're letting each one of these people know that this is the environment and culture of your home and that your child is off limits to sex abuse, basically. Because if you're speaking with a potential nanny about, we don't keep secrets in our family, we only have surprises, or my children know they don't touch other people's genitals and no one touches theirs, and you're going through the body safety rules, if that person sitting across from you, let's say it's a nanny or it's a sports coach or whomever it is, I want you for a second, if you'll imagine yourself having that conversation, if that person, unbeknownst to you, has a sexual behavior problem with children, what do you think might happen if you're very fluent and articulate and have some confidence in having this conversation with this person? What might happen if they have a problem in this way?
I mean, it would absolutely deter them. I would think like that it's like this parent is aware and is going to make sure that, that I know and everybody else knows what is expected. Yeah,
exactly. Now, I just need to say one thing, which is we can never say absolutely, because you never know. That person could try harder. They could slip in other doorways. But that is what I learn when I meet with people who sexually offend children, is that one of the biggest deterrents, and I love that you use that word, is you speaking up, you talking about body safety. You can call it body safety. You can call it sexual abuse. You can soften it with body safety. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
But the more you talk about it and create this like alarm system without being alarming, you know, just around your family and the culture of your home, the less vulnerable your children are. It minimizes risk. We can't guarantee anything, but that's the approach that I take in this education.
Yeah, I like that. I feel like, I mean, you're right, because it's like, and I can see what you're saying, that it's like, I love the idea that, but yeah, sometimes when it comes down to it, at least for me, sometimes I'm like, oh, well, you know, I don't want to offend anybody or make anybody think that I think that they could be a sexual abuser. Like, I don't want that. But also on the other hand, I don't have to do that. But also, like, I don't have to, I think I can have the conversation without making them feel that way. But I think I've also thought to myself in past situations, I would rather offend somebody than, and protect, and feel like I'm able to protect my child better. That I'm advocating for them. So maybe I have kind of a more difficult conversation and maybe I risk offending somebody. Yeah. But you'd hope that most people would hopefully be just really understanding and see like yeah, like she's serious about this. And right. So I think, yeah, you bring up a really good point that I think sometimes these conversations might not always be so easy, but I definitely think they're worth it. Because what you said is, so, yeah, we're kind of building this team.
What you're talking about, Caitlin, which I definitely go over in my workshops, is the barriers to prevention. And you said the most important one, which is your fear of accusing others, your fear of sounding accusatory, your fear of offending others, losing friends, losing family members, being perceived as one you didn't mention, but perceived as the helicopter mom, overly paranoid. All of these are the reasons we don't speak up. And they're the exact things, excuse me, that a person who sexually offends children looks for in you, in your family. So I promise you, there are ways that you can approach these conversations that are not accusatory. Now, in the end, you can't control how other people feel. You can't, Caitlin, make someone feel anything. If you say, in our family, we have surprises, not secrets. In our family, we keep the doors open when the children have play dates and play. If someone feels offended by that, I would ask you to ask yourself, what's more important, the safety of my child or what someone thinks about me?
Totally.
Just by bringing up sexual abuse does not mean you're accusing someone. We need to change this narrative and normalize this conversation. Because let me say one more thing and then I'll let you ask another question.
Oh, yeah.
I know I can go on. If your child were allergic to a food, some food, or medicine, and you brought them to school, would you hesitate and fear that you were going to accuse the school nurse by telling the nurse your child can't eat eggs or peanuts or the play date mom? Would you ever hesitate?
No. Never.
No. So why do we hesitate talking about touching rules and privacy and consent? Because it's such a taboo in this culture, and that's what my work's about, is trying to normalize this. So hopefully this helps your listeners. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what you're saying too is that it's like when we can build a community, because I think when we do have these conversations with our fellow moms that we hang out with, I think it brings about an awareness that it's like, oh yeah, like that is important. That's something that maybe I should talk about with my kid. And I think it inspires people to be like, yeah, like, so I think you're right. Like as we become more aware of it, and I think as we create these prevention teams, I think it helps other adults be aware and want to create their own teams as well. I think in turn, it creates communities that are safer for our children, which is what we want. If you have a group of little kids in your neighborhood, and if all of the parents that are involved in the group know your rules, like I think most parents would be totally on board with that, right? And if not, it's worth it to have a conversation so that you know you're not on the same page, right?
Exactly. I mean, if your child's going to go on a play date and you talk about the rules you have in your family for screen time or the movies that you're okay with and not okay with, or you talk about with the play date mom or dad or the sleep, you know, if it's a sleepover, the arrangements of sleeping, or you talk about children experimenting with their bodies because they do. And that's a whole nother piece of prevention. And that person is not on the same page with you. Either they minimize your concerns, or they say, oh, what's wrong with you? Is your child going to hurt mine? Or they go to the other extreme, and there's not an open conversation where you can talk back and forth. I invite parents to then ask, is this someone that's part of my prevention team? If something comes up on the sleepover, will we be able to talk? If our children end up on the iPhone looking at pictures of naked people, because this starts at 6 and 7 years old, will we talk to each other and be reasonable and figure it out together, or will we sue each other? That's the prevention team.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I love that you said that. Can I, you mentioned a few things, and I know that you talk more about it in your workshops and also in your book, but could you maybe mention, so you mentioned a few boundaries that you can talk about with the adults, which, you mentioned we don't keep secrets in our family, which I think is a really good one. and to have with your child too, that it's like between mommy and daddy, like there's no secrets. We always talk. So I love that. You also mentioned the like doors are open at play dates. I think you kind of mentioned maybe this one, but it's like, yeah, any like we like our kids like genitals are to themselves. They don't like no touching mm-hmm. or looking at other people's genitals, like talking with mm-hmm. our kids, but also making sure that's clear with adults. Is there any other boundaries just like off the bat that our listeners would be good to know that it's like, okay, if I want to have a conversation, what are maybe some other boundaries that I would mm-hmm. want to talk about and make sure that they're covered with these people?
Yeah. So I would start, I mean, I don't know the age of children your listeners have, but the basics are to start as early as possible using correct terminology for genitals. So mm-hmm. instead of, you know, using vagina, vulva, penis, testicles, breast, nipples, anus, etc., using correct terms, and then mm-hmm. weaving those in throughout development. So some of the other ones are the touching rules, basically that no one is allowed to touch your genitals. And then you give children exceptions when we're at the doctor, but I'm with you. You don't touch other people's genitals and when I'm helping clean you. So there are some exceptions to that. Exceptions are for safety and for medical needs. Okay. Mm-hmm. For hygiene and for medical reasons. So no one's allowed to touch your genitals. You don't touch other people's genitals. And this one's really important for siblings because most people don't know that sibling sexual abuse, sibling incest is one of the most common types of sexual abuse. Okay. More than parental incest. Siblings getting into situations that is not exploratory, where it's crossed the boundary, which I go into in detail. What is age-appropriate sex behavior for children? What is crossing a boundary or concerning? So when you're teaching the touching rules with siblings, super important to teach that we don't look at each other's genitals. You don't touch anyone's and no one touches yours. So those are the basic touching rules. You can get into that it's okay to touch your own genitals when you're in private. Mm-hmm. So you begin to introduce the concept of privacy. And if people feel for religious reasons, moral reasons, other reasons that they don't believe in that, that's a personal value. But I will say that developmentally, for human beings and for babies and children, they do touch their genitals. So whatever you believe or do, there needs to be no shame involved. This can damage and hurt a child because it's natural and normal for them to explore their own bodies. The other rule that I'll just mention for today is it's really important to start, after you've taught the touching rules, to start teaching kids about porn prevention, pornography prevention, and about looking at and showing pictures of naked bodies. Because the porn industry, without trying to be alarmist here, it's just the truth. The porn industry is doing everything they can every minute of every day to get your child to click and to lead them to pornography. And the average age that kids are exposed to porn, I mean, depending on the study you read, anywhere from 7 years old and even younger, but by 11, most children have been exposed to porn on their own phone or device or yours or a friend's. And so you begin talking with kids about that we don't take pictures of other people's naked bodies or our own. So that comes into the mix of body safety conversations. And these are not one-time conversations. They're over time through teachable moments, through what-if games, through conversations something you might hear on the radio, from a TV show, from a game you play with them, you know, online. There's lots of ways to bring these topics up. All of this is what we practice in the workshop. I mean, I know I'm just giving you kind of an outline, but we really get into each one of these topics and it can feel overwhelming because there's so much, but really the way I deliver it is broken into pieces to just do a little at a time when it comes up, but giving you the breadth of knowledge of, you know, everything else you do, Caitlin, to be taking care of your little ones. You know, this is an area that just is left out. Mm-hmm. And the likelihood of your child being sexually abused is so, so much higher than so many other safety concerns. Mm-hmm. You know, I know you didn't ask me about stats and I don't like to get into statistics, but we know that it's an epidemic. Children are being sexually victimized you know, depending on what study, but basic stat is 1 in 10 children. And it sometimes it's broken down in different studies to 1 in 4 girls, 6 boys. So if you look around your life, you know, half the people that we know have experienced this. And mm-hmm. it doesn't have to happen. You know,
right.
As simple as listening to your children when they blurt things out and discussing these body safety rules, and most importantly, discussing them with the adults that care for them.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. To deter that person, potentially. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So Feather, I love that you kind of talked about many things that we can do. For me, I'm thinking, so my kids are pretty young. I have age 2 and 4 little boys. And sometimes I think as a parent, it's like, okay, you know, I want to have these body safety conversations. I want to be able to talk to them about these things, but sometimes we're not always totally sure where to start and how to be age appropriate and be able to talk to them about that. I love that. I mean, one of the things I think from the get-go, and you mentioned this, is, you know, teaching them correct body terminology about their genitals. Like, we just use the correct terms so that they know, like, we're not embarrassed about talking about them. This isn't something that should be weird or embarrassing. It's the same as like talking about your elbow or your belly button, like when we're talking about care of our bodies. And so I think that's something that we can do from when they're babies, when we're narrating care, is just using those words. And I know, at least for me, I had read that somewhere when I, you know, first became a mom. And at first it was like a little weird for me to call, like, it was a little weird for me to call genitals like by their actual names with like a little kid. But now that is just like part of our, and it's not weird anymore for me because that is just how we do it. So I'm thinking for any listeners out there, if you're like, I don't know, that seems kind of weird. Maybe it might seem a little weird because that's not how we're used to doing it, or maybe that's not how we grew up, but it is important. And it's important for our kids to just know, like, this is part of our bodies. It's not a weird thing. So I love that you mentioned that. And I would love to hear anything else of like, how do we kind of start these conversations when they're little? Where do we start from there?
Yeah. So just to piggyback on what you said, and what I said is starting when diaper changing, starting when bathing, when children are very young, using correct names of body parts. And it can be uncomfortable for people. And I would just invite people to, you know, look at your own upbringing and your, you know, where your discomfort stems from. And then from there, know that using correct terminology for genitals reduces risk of sexual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Using correct terminology for genitals gives children the language and the information if they were ever to need to tell because somebody was touching them.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the language. If we can't talk about it, how do we expect them to? And
right.
giving them the correct terms from the beginning is just the truth. So in answer to your question, what else can we do? I recommend that parents have a whole handful of body safety books in their children's library. And you start with books like you do everything, you know, like you read books on lots of other topics. And mm-hmm. one book that I highly recommend, I know people can't see me and I can't hold it up, but for this particular topic that we're talking about, it's called Your Whole Body, From Your Head to Your Toes and Everything in Between. You can find a live link to it. I don't sell it, but I have lots of recommendations on my website. I don't know if mm-hmm. you can put it in your notes, in your show notes,
yeah,
or whatever. Yeah, parentingsafechildren.com/resources. You can click on, I have all kinds of books there, but Your Whole Body starts with the head and goes to the toes. And it's a beautifully illustrated, and it's not about sex abuse. It's just about the function of every single body part on the human body, including mm-hmm. the fingers and the eyes and the anus and the belly button and all the different body parts. So I would say for young children, start with books. I would mm-hmm. also say one more thing is to keep in mind that just like you nurture all the other ways that your 2 and 4 year old are growing, when your child was ready to sit up, you help them sit up and then crawl and then walk and eat solid food. And maybe your 4-year-old is close to being ready or will be to ride a bicycle, to read, mm-hmm. to write, etc. All these developmental milestones, sexual development, and I don't mean having sex, Okay, but sexual development, their bodies changing and growing, the different parts of the body, the functions, all of their questions. And even if they don't ask questions, because some children don't, some kids are more curious than others, but that including sexual development, conversations from the very beginning is really important and takes you so far to the adolescent years. So you don't have to sit down at 12 or 13 and have quote unquote the sex talk. That's not really how this works. It starts when your child at two, you know, might grab your breast or your nipple, and you get to set a boundary and, you know, let your child know that that's your breast and their nipple belongs to them and yours belongs to you. And you use these teachable moments, you know, to weave in the content that you first need to learn. You know, you need to learn it yourself, what the language is and what the content that I'm talking about, and then weave it in, you know, in everyday life, when they're playing with their playmates, when they're, you know, children get naked on, you know, when they play, they take their clothes off because it feels good, and how you can, what language you can use to set a boundary there and without shame, etc. So there's lots of teachable moments and literature out there to help. You know, there's classes, there's books for you to read as an adult. There's just so many resources. And, you know, I would love any of your listeners, if they're interested, to attend the, you know, my Parenting Safe Children workshop to get, you know, just the whole overview of how to include this in your life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Does that help?
Absolutely. Yes. No, because I think, and I think, so you mentioned a few things that, I mean, I think I have questions on too. So I want to circle back to a couple things that you said, because I want our listeners, I'm wondering if they kind of have some questions too. So with, because I'm thinking about, again, this age, it's like, it's true that, you know, they're so curious about things. So say if like your kids with other kids, like there's, you know, like maybe they do, like they go to the bathroom in front of the other one and like you've had the conversation, maybe you know about it. How do you, because I think I'm like trying to think of an example, but I know I've had conversations like with my 4-year-old before of like, you know, here's why, you know, we don't go in the bathroom with someone else. It's because it's, you know, we talk about privacy of like, when you go to the bathroom, you go in by yourself. And because that's a private thing, if you need help, you can always ask for mom or dad, but like, you know, that's a private thing. And I try to explain it, but I feel like sometimes, and I don't know if anybody else has done this, but sometimes I feel like he'll be like, well, but why? And because like for him, it's like, or so I think, I don't know if you have anything to add to that. Cause sometimes I'm like, well, because our private parts are private and, you know, we talk about what that is. So I don't know if you have, cause I feel like when they're so curious, sometimes I feel like when they ask the why, sometimes I don't always quite know to where to like go from there. Cause I'm like,
exactly.
Because it's important. But so I don't know if you have any like tips with that. And I know it's kind of nuanced because it probably depends on what the question is, like what they're talking about. But do you have anything with that, like with little kids like that?
Yeah. So first of all, it's such a common question. You're not alone in it. And children ask why all day long. They do. And it's a really astute question. Why do we go to the bathroom alone? Why do we cover our private parts? Mm-hmm. You know, quote unquote, private parts, genitals. Some kids ask, why would somebody touch my vagina, mommy, if you're teaching them no one's allowed to touch your genitals? So why questions come all day long. And yes, you're right. The answers, you know, to why would someone touch my private parts is different than why do I have to go to the bathroom alone? And I think, you know, the best that I can offer is repetition here and to really help your child understand the concept of privacy. And privacy, and it just depends on their age and their cognitive level, that privacy, things that are private are only for you. They're just for you. Some things we share. There's actually a little children's book called Some Parts Are Not for Sharing about a little fish who teaches that. But that the concept is there are some things that are just yours that don't belong to anybody else. And what those things are your own body. So because your own body is just yours, we're practicing privacy. I mean, you don't have to answer the question by telling a child that someone might molest you. That's not what we do. We don't give fear tactics. You know, just keep repeating the concept and helping them with the concept of privacy. And as they get a little older, by, you know, by 5.5, 6, 7, children definitely begin to, some children have modesty, and they intuitively understand it. And then there's other children who don't care, and they would be naked all the time. But you have to decide in your family what your values are and what your comfort level is. Some families are okay being naked, and others aren't. And that's a personal decision. The only boundary that I would offer around nudity is that if other people are visiting your home, other relatives, other friends, other children, then have clothes on. If you're a family that, you know, gathers in the nude, and that there's no judgment there. We have different cultures, different norms, but children are safer when they play together with clothes on. And that would be a boundary that I would, you know, offer. That one of the rules is they keep their clothes on when they play. Now, they will probably take them off to play dress up or costumes, and then they put them right back on. You know, the boundary really is that they don't stay naked, you know, but they can play dress up. So, the concept
privacy. Would you say, just a follow-up question too, because I like that you said, like, we don't want to use fear tactics. I think I'm wondering, like, would it, do you feel like it'd be, this is maybe just like a specific question. Do you feel like it's okay to say, like if they say, like, well, why would somebody touch my vagina if they're not, you know, mommy or daddy or whatever? Is it okay just to say, like, yeah, like, we want to, like, one of the ways is, like, when we keep our genitals or our private parts, like, with our clothes on, and we don't let anybody else touch them or see them, or we don't do the same with other people's, like, it's to keep us safe. Like, can we use that rhetoric of, like, it keeps us safe? Like,
you can. If you have a savvy child, they might say, why wouldn't it be safe? Mommy, why isn't it safe? I get this question all the time. A really savvy child will say, why isn't it safe for somebody to touch my private parts, my vagina, my vulva? It feels good when I touch it. Why can't someone else? A child might say that. And the way I, or something not as lengthy in a question, but why can't anyone, why isn't anyone allowed? The way I answer that is something like, great question. Always praise your child for the questions they ask, right? And then something like, most of the people that we know in our lives are safe people. Most people would never touch a child's genitals except to help them go to the bathroom, like mom and dad. But sometimes there may be a person who doesn't know the body safety rules or breaks the body safety rules. And if that ever happened, I want you to know that it's your body and no one's allowed to do that. And so you can come and tell me, and then on and on with the language of what your child can do. So it's turned into a positive rather than a fear tactic.
That's, okay, I love that.
That's how I would answer that question. Instead of, you need to know this because there are perpetrators and people who sexually abuse children. That's not helpful.
Right, right.
Yeah.
No, I appreciate you saying that. No, I think that's really helpful. And I think what I love about all of this is that it's like when we have these conversations, even when they're young, because they will, you know, I think they naturally ask questions, or as we're, as they're learning to potty train, like sometimes it's, it can naturally come up. So I love that it's like, as we're having these ongoing conversations, as they grow, I think what it also is teaching our children is that it's like, this doesn't make me, mom or dad, feel uncomfortable to talk about these things. This is just part of our body. And I think that you're right, as they get older, and then they become teens, you know, like things get more, complex isn't the right word, but as they grow and questions change, it's like, the hope is that they know that it's like, this doesn't bother me. I'm always here. And we've kind of had these conversations all the time, and they've had a positive experience every time they've had these conversations. Exactly. So it's like, oh yeah. Like, I know that I can talk to mom. If something has happened in the past and we've had the conversation, hey, if anybody tries to do these things or talks to you about these things, always come and tell me. If they say, don't tell mom and dad, always, like, you can maybe tell them to their face, like, okay, I won't, but you always come and tell mom and dad. And then if those things happen, then they know that if they've come to talk to you and they've had a positive interaction with it, it's like, we're teaching them every time that it's like, when you come to me, I will help make things better. Like, I'm so anyway, I like that. It's like, if it's an ongoing thing, not just like a one time we talked about it once, it's like, yeah, they know this is a safe place, and it's not weird. It's not weird to talk about. It's just, it is. So I love that.
Right. And you know, maybe that's something that we can summarize here with, which is, That's probably, Caitlin, the biggest takeaway that I get when I sit with people who sexually offend, you know, men and women both, is that I learn from them that listening to your children is one of the best antidotes to child sex abuse. To listening to what they say, listening to what they don't say, listening to the hints they drop and the things they blurt out, not without assuming that they bring sexually abused. That's not what I'm saying. But truly listening and letting them know, like you just said, that you are listening. There's nothing they can't talk about. When a child feels truly listened to like that, the chances are better that they would come tell. But I really want to stress that just because you tell your child, you come to me and tell me, we will make it better. Most children don't tell. Okay. Even when they're taught that throughout their life. If they are sexually abused by a parent, a grandparent, an uncle, an aunt, a cousin, another close person in the family, a teacher, someone that you love and know, the likelihood is they won't tell because they don't want to disappoint you, and they're afraid of the threats they might hear. So it's very important to be listening and telling children to come tell, but just know as a parent that just because you teach that doesn't mean that will happen.
Okay.
Yeah. And these are all the nuances that I can teach in a much longer course, you know, like what are the nuances of teaching children to say no and not to keep secrets and the language to use and how to approach that to minimize shame and blame and all of that as part of the education. Yeah.
No, I think this is awesome. The other thing, and I know that we are kind of nearing the end of our time. Yeah. I did want to just ask, and then I'm going to have you tell our listeners where they can definitely learn more, sign up for your workshop. The one thing that I wanted to touch base on, just because you mentioned it earlier, and I'm just thinking for our audience, I'm wondering, I'm sure that some people are like, wait, I want to know just a little bit more on that. You mentioned the like pornography prevention. Again, starting from a young age, you know, because our listeners range everywhere from babies all the way up to preteens or teenagers. What is there anything like right off the bat, some things that we can be aware of as parents to really help our children? Because obviously I think some of the scariest things for me is like my children are young enough that they're in my home and my care. I mean, almost 100% of the time. I mean, I'm not going to say 100 because of course I do have people babysit them sometimes, but like they're with me always. But I know that when they go to school and when they do like they're not with me all the time. And I think that's scary for me because of where I'm at in my life. And I know that, you know, as parents, we're not going to be around them. So I mean, obviously at the beginning, I know you talked about the prevention team, and I think that's probably so crucial to be able to, because they're not always going to be in our care. But, you know, I'm thinking about pornography prevention. I'm sure there's things that we can do in our own homes. But like, how can we help when they go to other people's homes? You know, so I don't know. Do you have any advice there of what we can do?
Well, a couple of things. Once you teach the body safety rules, you are ready to start talking about porn prevention by around age 6. On my website, on the resource page, I have a free download on talking points with children around porn. I also have a section on that resource page for books to read with children about private videos and public videos rather than calling it porn. Okay, so there's books there for children as well. For young children, I would just be super mindful of the devices that they're playing with, the controls on your phone, your TV, the computers, the iPads. Be mindful and learn about the movies they're watching, the kids' YouTube. And be involved in that device use or minimize it. I mean, you're talking 2 and 4. So I would say minimize as much as possible. As they get older, when they go off to school and play dates and camps, that you are talking with those adults that you put them in the care of. What are the policies around X, Y, and Z? You know, I mean, it's not just porn, but exposure, but all the things that we've talked about today, that you're bringing that up with others. If it's a play day and sleepover, you're getting on the same page with the other parent about what the exposure in their home is around devices. And then you're talking with your children, you know, so it's a whole approach with many people involved, but it's not the burden of the child.
Absolutely. Well, I think you mentioned, and I think we all know this, but it's just so pervasive because screens are so pervasive. So it's like, I mean, it can be everywhere, which, you know, 50 years ago, that wasn't the case. It was a you know, you kind of had to like go out to the store to go get something, you know, so it's just interesting because I think, and we have to be aware of it as parents. And I think you're right. Like, I feel like kids younger and younger are getting access to screens and screens that are unsupervised. So I think, again, as parents, it's important for us to, number one, have like on our own kids, like with their screens, making sure that we are so aware that it's like, I mean, it really is just a click away, and it's so easy for kids to stumble upon things that that is not okay for them to see. And it's not their fault. It is, it's up to us. The way I see it too is like, you know, we wouldn't just like have a bottle of beer open on their bedside counter, you know, like we would make sure that there were boundaries and set. So anyway, I think, I think those are just really good to be aware of, that it's like, it's so pervasive. And I really love coming back to what you said about the prevention team. Like, if we're having these conversations with other parents, and it's like, hey, these are the boundaries that we have around screens. And are you okay? Kind of like, are you okay to uphold this when our kids, because maybe they don't feel that normally, but it's like, as long as they know when our kid is playing, like, we're not okay with screens at all. Like, at least for me and my kids' age, it's like, I'm not okay with it at all.
Right.
So, I think having those conversations with other parents is really crucial. So I appreciate you bringing that up.
Sure.
Okay. So you have given us all such great information, and I know that a lot of listeners are thinking, okay, this was great. I have some places to start from and things that maybe I want to do, books that I want to get. Where can, if people want to learn more from you, where can they find you?
So Instagram, Facebook, I post most days, or not every single day, but very often, have a robust community where I'm constantly posting information. But more importantly, I hope people will consider coming to the full workshop where you will be able to walk away and have everything you need to practice prevention. So parentingsafechildren.com. My calendar is there. All of my workshops are presented live via Zoom. So anyone, anywhere can attend, with your family, with your friends. You can host your own workshop. You can reach out to me through my website also. But I have three live workshops coming up, and the one coming up the soonest is February 3rd and 10th from 9 to 11:30 on both dates, part one and part two. It's a two-part workshop on Mountain Time. And you can register on my website, and my books and my cards and all my conversation starter cards to get these conversations started are on my website. So parentingsafechildren.com is the best place.
Perfect. Okay. Yeah. That's excellent. And we'll put all of this information in our email as well as in the show notes, so that our listeners can learn more and click the links there. I honestly can't think of a more important topic. I love that the title of your book and like your website is Parenting Safe Children, because I think that's all of our goals. We want our children to be safe, and we want to be able to parent them to be safe. So thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah.
We appreciate
it. Thank you for having me.
Yes. And listeners, I hope you all have enjoyed this interview with Feather, and we hope this helps you find the magic, and we hope that it helps you keep our kids safe.
If you like what you heard today, please share this with a friend or loved one. This means so much to us, and it helps the podcast continue to grow. And if this podcast has meant something to you, there are three things that you can do right now that will help us immensely. The first is to subscribe or follow us. And you can do that by going to our page wherever you listen to podcasts. And then if you tap on the upper right-hand corner, there is usually a plus sign or a subscribe button. And just go ahead and tap that, and that will allow you to subscribe or follow us, which what this does is make sure that you never miss an episode, and it really helps us at Find the Magic. The second thing you can do is share it with a friend. So if you like what you heard, send it to somebody or post it on social media. This does a ton to help our podcast continue to grow and for us to be able to make more episodes. And lastly, if you've enjoyed being here with us on Find the Magic, we would love it if you could leave us a 5-star review. We read every single one of those reviews and we appreciate them so much. And we want you guys to know that we feel that you, our listeners, are our friends, and we're so grateful. Thank you so much for sticking with us on this journey. We have loved it. So let's find the magic together.
Me, 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 me. Brown cows.